all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
Now, welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, CW2 type person, Army helicopter pilot, 1969. Oh my God, it's almost 50 years ago. It's hard to believe. Welcome to Veterans Radio. Spring has sprung in Michigan. We got over 60 degrees today. The snow has finally melted. It's a gorgeous weekend here in the Midwest, and we are so excited to have you on our program. We've got a great program for you. We're going to be talking to an author of a book called Gravity. It's about a Tennessee National Guard unit that was sent to Iraq. It's a powerful, powerful story, and we're really excited to have the author, Beth Underwood, with us later on in the hour. As you know, each week on Veterans Radio, we've been really pushing the idea of hiring the veteran. And so on today's program, we've got another guest, and this is from a really big organization, so I'm really excited to have her on the program. And before I talk with her, her name is Jennifer Gearing, and she is the Senior Director of Business and State Engagement for the Hiring Our Heroes program at the United States Chamber of Commerce Foundation. That's the United States Chamber of Commerce. That's the big one. And she is the Senior Director, as it says, of the Hiring Our Heroes program. She has been with the Chamber of Commerce since March of 2003. She's lived in Michigan. I just read that this morning, finally read my PR piece I got. She was president of the Dearborn Area Chamber of Commerce in Michigan for over 8 years, and she's a graduate of Bowling Green University. That's another MAC school, so we like Bowling Green. And right now I want to welcome Jennifer Gearing to Veterans Radio.
Thank you so much. It's great to be with you this afternoon.
Thank you very much for taking the time out of a beautiful Sunday. I'm sure it's Sunday wherever you are. Where are you anyway?
I'm in Washington, D.C., and it is beautiful here today, too. Spring has finally reached the Northern Virginia and D.C. area.
It's exciting when the sun is out and, you know, you can go outside and just kind of take a deep breath and, it doesn't freeze your lungs.
That's right.
As we do have. Well, Jennifer, as I've mentioned in your introduction, the reason that we have these organizations on Veterans Radio is because of all the amazing work that all of these corporations are doing. And I find out that the United States Chamber of Commerce Foundation also has a Hiring the Heroes program. Could you please tell us a little bit about your program?
I'd be happy to. We just celebrated our 4-year anniversary. The program was started by an individual who was employed by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, a Marine who was traveling around the country with the CEO, Tom Donahue, and realized that employers really wanted to take a large role in employing our nation's veterans and military spouses and transitioning service members. So the program started organically with the idea of just having one hiring fair, and Dale, we're happy to report we've had over 870 hiring fairs in 4 years. That's about one per business day.
Wow.
But more importantly, we're getting folks hired. We've documented over 25,000 hired from our hiring fairs alone. And we have our goal set on collecting 500,000 hires through all of our partners and all of our programs by June of this year.
Well, how are we doing?
We're doing great. We're just over 400,000 right now. So we're on track for sure.
Wow. And so if I'm a veteran of Iraq, Afghanistan, and I'm looking for some help, how do I get help from the chamber?
So we have a multitude of programs, events, and initiatives. And yeah, I'd like to point out that we serve transitioning service members, veterans, and military spouses, veterans of all eras. So we work with Vietnam vets, Korean vets, and I actually had a phone call from a World War II vet who had his sights set on being a greeter at Walmart. So I did everything that I could to make that connection happen. But all of our programs and events are accessible via the Internet, hiringourheroes.org. We have a robust schedule of events, not only in communities across the country, but also on major military installations. We'll have 20 what we call transition summits on military installations, and actually 3 overseas this year will be in Japan, Korea, and Italy. But our digital programs include webinars for both employers and job seekers. Mm-hmm. We have resume translators and create creators for job seekers, veterans, and military spouses. And we have what's called Fast Track. It's a way to illustrate fast-growing industries and fast-growing communities. And then, again, virtual hiring fairs. So veterans, service members who are serving overseas can connect virtually with employers back here in the States. And then, of course, what we call our brick-and-mortar hiring fairs in communities across the country.
Wow. We're talking with Jennifer Gearing. She's the Senior Director of the Hiring Our Heroes program at the United States Chamber of Commerce Foundation. And this kind of sounds like a clearinghouse for everyone. So if I run a small or large business and I want some help in setting up a Hire the Vets program, I can contact you too. Is that correct?
You absolutely can. And what we did to help employers, small, medium, and large size employers all across the country and in various industries, we created what's called Employer Roadmap. And through our great partnership with USAA, we collected articles, research, best practices, and action plans and put them online at folks' fingertips 24/7 in a really easy and digestible way. Now, you can go out there and comb the internet for information. You could look for days and download hundreds and hundreds of pages of information. What sets Employer Roadmap apart is we deliver it in a unique way. You tell us if you're a small, medium, or large size business, and if you're novice, competent, or proficient in the space. And based on one of those 9 profiles, we deliver information that's informative and relevant and timely for you. So if I'm talking with a 20-year Air Force veteran who's now the military recruiter for a Fortune 500 company, I'm not going to put him through Military 101 like I would a new recruiter that just graduated from, let's say, Michigan State University.
Yeah, one of those places. Okay. Well, it sounds fascinating, and I love the idea that you've almost achieved your goal of half a million folks. That's a half a million jobs out there, and that's just through this one program. And as you, our listeners are aware of, we have been talking with a lot of different corporations every week about their veteran transition programs, and colleges have their veteran transition program, and I think it's such a great opportunity for this generation of veterans, and as you pointed out, also for older generation of veterans to find jobs, you know, if they need help in relocating or all these other things. So if we need help or they need help, I got a job evidently every Sunday afternoon, where would they go?
HiringOurHeroes.org. As I mentioned, all of our events and programs are there housed on that portal. We also have a robust social media platform. So, you know, almost 400,000 followers on Facebook. We have an Instagram platform as well as Twitter. And we're, you know, just a click away. We have a great team in Washington, D.C., and folks spread actually out all across the country, and we're willing to help make those great connections between service members, spouses, and the employers. We've got a lot of really good work to do. You know, we, as I mentioned, 870 hiring fairs and almost 500,000 hires, but we have more work to do. We have 1.5 million transitioning service members who will be transitioning into civilian life in the next 3 to 5 years, and this really becomes an issue of workforce development. So we want to make sure that we have all those great resources at the fingertips of both the job seekers and employers alike.
So is this one of the programs where you can you pair up the veteran, or do you kind of look at their experience in the military and translate it into civilian possibilities?
We do. We have a great program. It's called the Personal Branding Resume Engine for Veterans, and we have what's called Career Spark for military spouses. And we help them translate that experience. In the instance of a veteran, we help them take those MOS codes and their education and their awards and acknowledgments and put them into a resume that's easy to read for a civilian. And then for our military spouse population, they've got incredible volunteer experience, work experience, sometimes gaps in the resume because of PCSing, and we help put a resume together for a military spouse that really showcases the great experience they have and the great value that they would bring to an employer as well.
Wow, this is great. I was talking to a young veteran the other day, and he just couldn't figure out how to put a resume together, and now I've got a place to send him.
Absolutely. Personal Branding Resume Engine and Career Spark both powered by our good friends at Toyota. And I should mention everything that we do is free. So accessible, you know, we don't want to put any barriers in between our job seekers and employers. So, we've committed to making sure that all of that is, all those resources are accessible.
This is really exciting, Jennifer. Thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio. For all of you out there that are listening, go to hiringourheroes.org, and this whole thing is in front of you. I'm looking at their website right now, and I'm thinking of getting a new resume, see what I can come up with. Well, thank you very much, and I hope to have you on again and get an update of how things are working and maybe getting on your mailing list so I can find out where your hiring fairs are and we can alert our local audiences.
That'd be great. We have monthly newsletters that we send out to employers, job seekers, and military spouses. So I'd love to have you subscribe to any one of those newsletters on our homepage.
All right. Jennifer Gearing from the Hiring Our Heroes program at the United States Chamber of Commerce Foundation. Thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio.
Thank you.
All right. Men and women are coming home right now. There's another place for you to go find a job. They'll even take your MOS and translate it into a civilian skill, and those employers are going to hire you because we know that hiring a veteran is a good job and a good idea, and they work hard and they follow orders, and they can improvise, and they can just go to plan C, D, and E if things don't go right. We're going to be taking a little break right now, and when we come back, we're going to be talking with a good friend of ours, Joyce Faulkner, who has her own publishing house that I just learned about a couple of weeks ago. And she's going to be talking about some of the stories that the publishing house is putting out there, including our guest later on in the program, Beth Underwood, with her book, Gravity. So we'll be right back after this message. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
Conway Truckload honors the service of American military men and women with an apprenticeship program that allows veterans to use the GI Bill to supplement their income during their first year driving, as well as tuition reimbursement when they begin. Conway Truckload wants to continue the tradition of service right here at home. To learn more, call 866-WORK-FOR-US or visit online truetoblue.com/military.
And we're back on Veterans Radio on a beautiful Sunday afternoon. The sun is shining here, and I know that the sun is shining in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where our next guest is. And I'm welcoming a good friend and frequent supporter and guest on Veterans Radio, Joyce Faulkner. Joyce, welcome back.
Hey, it's nice to hear from you again. How things going?
Going really well, going really well. In fact, I'm so happy to have you on the program and talk about your publishing house. I like the sound of that, don't you?
I do, too. It sounds great.
I just want to remind our audience that Joyce, I met Joyce at a Military Writers Society of America conference. I don't remember when it was now.
2009.
Wow. Okay, 2009. And she was the president of that association at that time. And I had a great time there. Met just so many incredibly talented men and women and writers and veteran writers and so forth. And it's just been a supply line for Veterans Radio to introduce you to some really great stories. And that's what I think what both of us are dedicated to is getting those stories out. And when I was reading the PR part of your blog for her publishing company is called Red Engine Press, correct?
Yes, Red Engine Press.
Where did that come from?
Well, we had years ago, we started this company, I think probably around 2006, and we're partnering with a gentleman who was a disabled fireman, and he wanted to call the company Red Engine Press. Now, in my mind, I had a red locomotive, a choo-choo train.
Oh, that engine.
But, of course, he was thinking about the red fire engine.
Okay.
So he is a step back now. He's getting better, hopefully, in his health and his issues. Mm-hmm. But Pat McGrath Avery and I have chugged on with our Red Engine Press. And we originally had, and still do, had many varieties of genre. And when I got involved with the military writers, we kind of put Red Engine Press not completely on hold, but we weren't going full force.
Mm-hmm.
As we got involved more with the veterans, I did a book for a gentleman who was a survivor of the Bataan Death March. And his name was Billy Templeton, and unfortunately he has since passed. But it really impressed upon us how important it is to get these stories out. Billy had lived a long life, and he had three wives, three sets of children, and while he had never not answered a question, none of those kids knew the whole story from beginning to end of what happened to him during World War II. And when we finished the book, and it was very trying for him to go back to those times, as you can imagine.
Sure.
But when we finished the book, his children came up to us and thanked us that they now knew their dad in a different way. And interestingly enough, we had arranged for a launch of that book in Branson, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And the young Marines and sailors and soldiers were so excited to meet Billy and so enthused to hear what he had overcome. And you could see that what he had to say mattered to them. And after that, we felt very dedicated to getting those stories out while there's still time to do it. And hopefully going to the next step, you and I have talked about this before, of encouraging people to write their stories themselves.
Mm-hmm.
There are lots of good reasons to do it. One being that you want to tell your story your way. And let's face it, your story is your story. We did a book on the Sunshine Tunnel Massacre survivors, where there were 9 guys that we were including. And they had 9 totally different experiences. You know, the tall guys saw things differently than the short guys.
Right.
The guys at the front of the line saw something different than the guys at the back of the line. The guys who were shot, experienced something differently than those who weren't. At first they argued with each other. That couldn't possibly be. That didn't match my impression. But what we finally did was say, okay, we believe all of you. And your story is your story.
Yeah, that's the way you saw it. In fact, Joyce and I really kind of bonded a little bit over her book In the Shadow of Suribachi, because we found out that both our fathers had been at Iwo Jima.
Yes.
Along with an awful lot of fathers of members of your Military Writers Society.
Yes.
So we kind of had an informal Sons and Daughters of Iwo Jima meeting and found that, as you mentioned, that, you know, we didn't know all the information about our fathers. Either they didn't tell us or we just didn't ask. And I think that was
We didn't know to ask. We
right.
were, maybe you would have asked more because you're a veteran yourself. But, of course, I was not part of that world growing up. So I didn't know the right questions to ask at the time.
I didn't get to because, unfortunately, my father passed away when I was 15, and I didn't say, hey, Dad, what'd you do in the war? I found an album after he had died with all these pictures and things in it,
yeah.
And I went, if only I had known what kind of kid was I. So
yeah. Well, in my case, I had known about this book. I remember sitting in my dad's lap and looking at pictures when I was maybe 5 or 6. But we just moved this last week, and mm-hmm. all those old things I found boxes of.
Oh, yeah.
And just going through them and looking at the picture, he was a Munchkin Marine. He was like 5'1", 90 pounds, those realities, when you put it together with, the rifle is almost as tall as he is, and you start really thinking about what it must have been like, it's stunning the things you don't realize.
Right. And what I want to get to here, we've got about 5 minutes, I think, until we come up to a break here, is mm-hmm. that one of the things that Red Engine Press is doing is that it appears that you're trying to collect a lot of these stories from various
yes.
authors. And when I contacted you last week, you were kind enough to put me in touch with Beth Underwood. And how did you find her before I bring her on?
Well, Beth is a member of Military Writers Society of America, and she has been working on this book for a long time. And she approached my writing partner and business partner, Pat McGrath Avery, and said, oh, I've got this manuscript. Take a look at it. And we were interested right off the bat because we have a lot of material of World War II. We have material Korea. We have Vietnam. We have nothing on the current series of wars that have gone on. And we were very interested in what she had been working with. And she was trying to bring to the families of people who had gone to war for quite an extended period for a National Guard unit. And their experiences, I think you will be the first to say, is very often when you first come back, it's really hard to talk about it, and everybody seems so far away from you and so distant. And she was trying to cross that chasm, if you will, so that the world would know what these guys went through and appreciate the sacrifices and the determination that they exhibited during their time there. And Red Engine Press is looking for that kind of, you know, we have four books on Iwo Jima. You know, we have a couple of books on Korea. We have lots of books on World War II. And this is our very first for the war in Iraq.
Okay, so if I am a writer out there who's listening to Veterans Radio and goes, I have this manuscript and I'd like somebody to take a look at it, they
yes.
could contact you, and how would they do that?
They can contact me at redenginepressinfo@gmail.com.
There we go, redenginepressinfo@gmail.com. And your website is?
redenginepress.com.
There you go.
www. Easy to find.
It is easy to find in there. And the website has got covers of hundreds of books on it. And
yes.
I think that they're going to really enjoy it. And Joyce, I'm going to ask you to stay on the line for as long as you can. But I want to bring Beth on before we take our break just to kind of introduce the book. So joining us here on Veterans Radio is the author of Gravity, and that is Beth Underwood. Beth, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Dale, thank you so much for having me on. Great to be with you guys.
Thank you so much for making the journey home safely, or if you're on the side of the road, I appreciate that too.
No worries.
No worries. That's good. In the next couple of minutes, if we could just kind of get a little intro into this story of Gravity, which is the story of K Troop of the 278th Armored Cavalry Regiment of the Tennessee National Guard, correct?
Correct.
Mostly?
Uh-huh.
All these new nomenclatures. So how did you come upon this story?
Well, at the time when these guys were deployed, it just so happened that I worked in a small town in Tennessee, Livingston, Tennessee, which actually housed the armory for Knife Troop. And I had just recently moved in, and it was Veterans Day 2004, and I landed on the square, because Livingston, Tennessee actually does have a courthouse square. And I saw all these families up there. I mean, just hundreds of people. And as it turned out, essentially that county, Overton County, Tennessee, had sent their sons and daughters and brothers and husbands off to war. And, you know, it was a coming together, I think, up there on that Veterans Day just to pray for their safety, to pray for their return, because at that point there had already been a couple of Marines who had been killed. So it was a really trying time, I think. And then as I got involved with Knife Troop, one thing led to another, and I knew there was a story to tell.
Well, it is a great story, and I can't wait to hear. I'll have to go to the news to come back and talk a little bit, a lot about that story. And we're going to have one of the members of Knife Troop on the program with us, because it seems like you kind of followed him throughout the process.
Yeah.
Since he was a National Guard recruiter. And I'm just kind of fascinated by the idea of that the National Guard was even called up. I don't think everybody was really aware of what the National Guard's responsibilities were and why it was so surprising, I think, probably to the National Guard members that they were called to active duty.
Oh, sure. And not only called to active duty, but put in the front lines. You know, they were in one of the most hostile areas in Iraq, known as the Triangle of Death.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, and you know, this affected in Tennessee roughly 4,000 people. It just took that entire battalion and, you know, put them across the pond.
I can't wait to talk more about this. We got a minute to take a break. And as I was researching, luckily Joyce sent me a Kindle copy of the book, and I was able to read it. And it's a fascinating story, and I can't wait for our audience to learn more about it. Because of the Tennessee connection that I've mentioned before, my dad was from Tennessee, from a little town called Normandy over by Shelbyville, and then he taught school in Harriman and Springfield, and I was looking on the map where Sweetwater was, and it brought the whole thing home to me. And so I can't wait to talk to you, Beth, in just a moment. We're going to bring on, as I mentioned, one of the troopers there, and Beth Underwood is the writer of Gravity, a story of Knife Troop, the 3rd of the 278th Armored Cavalry Regiment, National Guard from the Tennessee National Guards. So we'll be back after the short break for the news. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them.
Specialist Ross McGinnis threw his back against a grenade thrown into his Humvee, saving the lives of his crewmates. Details after this.
It's pouring rain. It's still dark outside. Your heart starts beating really, really fast. You've never done anything so hard in your life. This is boot camp. This is the real thing now. It's such extreme pain, you don't understand how you can finish. I began to feel that there was no way I was ever going to have my title, U.S. Marine. It takes special inner strength, courage, and desire to do this. I was just thinking, I'm so close. I'm so close. And when I finished, I was like, I'm done. I did it. The moment I will never forget is when this drill instructor that I admire so much comes up to me straight in front of me, put her arm on my shoulder and said, "Good morning, Marine."
DSC Summer Volkman became a United States Marine. Can you? Call 1-800-MARINES. Maybe you could be one of the few and the proud.
On December 4th, 2006, McGinnis was manning the turret in the last Humvee of a six-vehicle patrol in northeast Baghdad, when an insurgent threw a grenade from the roof of a nearby building. As he stood up to get ready to jump out of the vehicle, as he'd been trained to do, officials say McGinnis realized the other four soldiers in the vehicle did not know where the grenade had landed and did not have enough time to escape. He threw his back against the radio mount and smothered the explosive with his body. McGinnis was killed instantly, while the other four men survived. He was awarded the Medal of Honor posthumously by President Bush on June 2nd. 2008. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
And And we're back on Veterans Radio, listening to the Caissons Moving On and Moving On, as they say. If you'd like to get in on the conversation today, you can give us a call here at Veterans Radio at 734-822-1600. That's 734-822-1600. You can follow us on Facebook and on Twitter. Not that I know how to use any of those things, but we like to try and use them as much as we can so people can keep updated with what we're going on with. I have a little review of the book Gravity written by Beth Underwood that was sent in by a friend of ours, and I want to read this to you. It says, Beth Underwood has written a compelling tale of America's citizen soldiers, weaving a tapestry of how demanding the strands of military and civilian life are. People who trained on weekends, often without the advantage of continuing professional guidance provided by our regular military branches, are asked to step into the fire of war in a dust bowl a lifetime away. Our wars against terrorism have forced our reservist and National Guard personnel to walk the tangled line between warrior and family member in and out a number of times. Gravity pulls the reader into the turmoil and refuses to let go. This is by our good friend Mike Moon Mullins, and another one of the award-winning writers from the Military Writers Society of America. Beth, I think he kind of describes what your book is about, don't you think?
Oh, did we lose her?
Did we lose Beth? I would say we did.
Sounds like we might have.
I think we might have. So we'll track her down. So, all right, Joyce, tell me what you think of Mike's comments there.
Well, I think Mike obviously hit the nail on the head. When I first read this book, I was just absolutely stunned that so many people were in the line of fire, and they were in the, quote, triangle of death. They were right where things were happening that I would have thought our regular troops would be. I was totally unprepared to realize that these guys, you know, had jobs and homes and kids and all of these things with the expectation that they would just be serving for short periods of time or, you know, do the weekend warrior bit. And these guys were in there doing it.
That's what I thought. In fact, we're going to skip ahead a little bit, and I'm going to ask John Mac McCulloch. I'm probably mispronouncing that, Mac. If I did, I'm sorry. Who is one of the members of the story that Beth wrote about? Mac, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Oh, outstanding. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for, well, I know it sounds a little bit of a cliche, but thank you for going there and doing your job when it probably wasn't expected by you or the other members of your group.
Well, there was a few who didn't. I mean, there was a few who did, you know, and that I think Beth captured it perfectly. For me, as coming, you know, I did my initial tour in the Marine Corps, and so I became a recruiter for the National Guard simply because I missed that being in service and stuff, and so the National Guard was kind of a home to just to kind of get me back in uniform and still experience that camaraderie. But you know, most of the recruiters that I served with initially when I came to the Guard, that was the sentiment they had, was that that the National Guard would get deployed whenever the Russians came over the foothills mountains. And so for me, I thought it was maybe a preparation exercise. You know, some of the others thought, yeah, they wouldn't have spent this kind of time and effort in trying to get us ready to go. But me, I kind of straddled the fence there for a while that, yeah, there's no way they're going to take a little troop out of Sweetwater, Tennessee, and truthfully activate them and send them across the pond. And so the closer we kept getting to it, I'll have to admit there was a part of me that started to get excited about it simply because the training that I experienced in the Marine Corps, I guess you always question yourself as a soldier as to whether or not you could actually face the rigors of what it's going to take.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a part of me that was excited about it, a part that was nervous, and that's exactly what I think Beth has done. Is she's captured the roller coaster ride of emotions that you go through when you do have to face and confront this, and that you do get through, you know, an 18-month deployment. I think you learn a lot about yourself in this process. So I really can't. I just can't. I can't start to thank Beth enough for what she's done and what Red Agent Presence has done, is that, you know, not many soldiers get the opportunity to hold that time that they spent there in their hands.
No, and it's such a great story. And how do you pronounce your last name so I don't butcher it again?
It's McCullum, but that's the reason the nickname Mac exists. Or
okay.
It's
McCullum. All right, I've just, you know, I can't read phonetically. It doesn't work all the time. Beth is back on the line. Beth, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
I know you. I don't know where you went. But, Beth, I'm going to ask you first, and then Mac, if you want to jump in, feel free. I want to talk about some of the other men in this story and the relationship, because one of the men was a football coach, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And he ended up in the same unit with three of his former players.
Right, right. Eric Lever, who is now principal at Sweetwater High School and still coaches football.
That's amazing. That is amazing. My dad's contract, he was principal at Harriman High School. His salary was $125 a month. I hope he's doing better than that now.
I hope so, too. What a small world, though.
It is a very small world. So tell me about these four, especially, who were training on weekends and, you know, they go away for a couple of weeks in the summertime, and the next thing you know, they're shipped down to Mississippi and then out to California, and off they go.
I think that pretty much sums it up, doesn't it, Mac?
Well, that was a...
That pretty much does. I mean, those four, you know, the thing of it was is that the difficulty that was there...
Did I just lose him?
I'm back.
Okay, Mac, I'm sorry.
No problem.
I'm not sure exactly what happened there. But so when you first got to Iraq, can you describe it for our audience? I don't think people have the opportunity to really realize what the terrain is like, what the weather is like, and where you guys were.
Well, the area that we were in Balad there, now that I'm out in Arizona, I mean, it is very much similar to the Sonoran Desert minus the saguaro cactus.
Mm-hmm.
But it's almost as if you're time traveling. I mean, the lay of the area out there looks pretty much like, I guess what I'd always imagined, you know, reading stories in the Bible look like. Still got some of the old mud huts that are out there. Families, farm and their farmland are still really close to the little small house. Not uncommon to see just large fields. But all of this growing in the middle of the desert, temperatures sometimes, like when we first got there, November, December time frame, still, relatively cold at this time. A lot of rain coming in. Sandstorms can kick up at any moment. So you've got the experience of, rain, cold, but then during the day it kind of heats up. So you got humidity, and I mean, just, you kind of walk around. I always described it as though there was like this orange haze that was just present everywhere, that seemed like it never went away.
Well, your forward observation base, or FOB, where was that located?
FOB O'Ryan was about 6 clicks, about 3 miles south of LSA Anaconda, located right north of Baghdad, just there on the outskirts. And our predominant role there, we controlled pretty much everything between the northern part of Baghdad on up to some of the southern reaches there of Samarra, and we had a pretty large area that dealt with most of the what they call the Salal Den province. And the major cities that we had was Adujal, which Adujal was, of course, one of the cities that Saddam had, murdered over 300 people.
Right, that's mentioned in the story. It's,
yes.
It's amazing to me what I was reading in there, and I know that Beth, you're back on the line. Is that correct?
I'm back.
All right, here we go again. Right. I better get this story. I'm going to come back to Mac to talk about the conditions there and what he ran into. But Beth, we were talking about the members of this organization. Can you kind of describe some of them? Because it's all across the spectrum of you know, gung ho, and some people are, you know, are holding back. And what am I going to go over there? And if I go over there, I'm going to get, you know, I can relate to this. You know, I'm going to go get myself killed someplace. Can you talk about some of the people that are in the story?
Sure. Well, of course, Mac's here to defend himself, so I'll move along from that one. But one of them who sort of sticks out is Vince Gray, who was, you know, he was nervous from the get-go, and I don't know that I'm sure he overcame that nervousness at some point, but certainly, you know, he always was willing to step up no matter what was asked of him. He clearly was able to step up and do whatever he was asked to do. But, you know, that nervousness that he sort of went into, just to me, he was a very meek person. I don't know that he would agree with that definition. But certainly that was one end of the spectrum. And Mongo, Billy Yates Matoy, he was Spike the Bulldog, I think, as I have described him. You know, he was just rough and tumble. I'll get it. I'll knock the door down. Whatever you need me to do. Breach the door. I got it. I'm your man. Send me in. And then, you know, you had, Paul Shannon, who was, their commander, who was seasoned at this, as was, the Army Ranger that they had, Neil Wolfenbarger.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you really had, not only did you have, people that came from just the 2 weekends a month and 2 week or 1 weekend a month and 2 weekend or 2 weeks out of the year, you had that meshing with people that had 20 years active duty experience, whether it be as a ranger or, you know, or whatever the case might be. So you had the experience levels, but then you also had the personality conflicts. And I think in the end, one of the beautiful parts of their story is that with all of these different personalities and different experience levels, they made it work, and they made it work very well.
Yeah, it sounded as though that you guys really had a system going there that was working for you, Mac. And I can't imagine going out. Luckily, I was never on the ground that long. So I mean, I was a guy that just dropped you off and took off and went away and came back to get you later on. So I can't imagine the pressure and the tension that you're under when you're going down these roads every day and they're blowing up on you. Can you convey a little bit of that feeling to our audience, you think?
Well, that is probably the most difficult part to explain, because it's one of the biggest reasons, I think, that my experience as a recruiter says it keeps people out of service, is that this level of fear. But the level of fear that you had every day didn't really have a whole lot to do with yourself. The most important thing and the most important aspect that your fear incites when you're out on a mission is not what happens to me personally, but what happens to the soldier on my left and my right. What happens if I don't bring 110% to the table today, and my actions cause someone other than me to get hurt? And so when you're riding, you have this intense feeling that I have a commitment to the soldiers I'm with to give my absolute best because their life depends on it. So it definitely is defined by one of the Army values of selfless service and what that means. So again, I mean, even to this day, while we make a lot of jokes between each other, Big Weave, I still get reminded from Big Weave of an IED that I just missed one day. And then you kind of learn to make jokes about it, even though the seriousness of it is, well, it could have cost someone their life. And when it doesn't and you get lucky, well, then of course you do the next best thing is, and you bring that up as a constant reminder that, hey, you almost messed this up. But
yeah,
it's that commitment that you feel for one another that just really I mean, it seems to make it a lot easier to deal with.
I think that's so important, and as you were mentioning it, I was thinking, you know, we are more concerned about the people on our left and right, that we can't let down our team, you know, by not concentrating on whatever our job was. And, you know, you were talking about Captain Shannon, and Lieutenant Tippins was nervous about, you know, how is he going to perform, and it looks like he performed just fine as it was going along. We've got about less than 10 minutes to go. Talk about a little bit about Joey Hunt and Vic Lawrence, if you would, Beth, start off with.
Beth? You know, it's so odd that you ask about this, and I've just spent the weekend with his parents, and everything I know about Joey comes from Mac and the other guys, or Joey's parents, because I never met him.
Mm-hmm.
And I just sort of, everything that comes up in my mind is just this good old boy who probably always had a trick up his sleeve that nobody else really knew about. And it's like maybe he had a little secret to dealing with life. Always a happy guy. And had a heart of gold, you know, would reach out to help anybody. His mom talks about being in Kmart one time, and I think he was about 13, 14, maybe 15, and she's really just losing her patience. Come on, Joey, we gotta go. She can't find him. She's running through the store looking for him, and finds him in the toy aisle with some child from, I guess, from the elementary school. And she's like, what are you doing? And he said, Mama, he just wants this toy. He doesn't have enough money. I'm trying to help him find something he has enough money to pay for. Mm-hmm. And those stories are just everywhere. You know, when Tim and Marcia, his parents, talk about him, that's what they talk about. Just a gem of a person. And then Vic, unfortunately, his father has since passed away, but I did, meet with him a few times. And I think, as Mac would tell you, and he can probably tell you a lot more, but Vic was the big practical joker, and he was always trying to talk Paul Shannon into playing a joke on someone, and I don't think he really cared who it was going to be on. So again, another guy that's just, you know, just good old family guys. And, as Mac would tell you, one of Joey's favorite songs was Simple Man, and he wanted to learn that more than anything else. He wanted to learn that song, come home, play it for his parents. And that so accurately describes both of these men. Just simple men and good men.
Just what we always say here on the program is ordinary men were put in extraordinary circumstances and do the best that they can. And that's all that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Mac, can you talk a little bit about Joey and Vic? I don't want to go into the event because I don't want to spoil the whole thing for people that are going to read the book. I've probably already given away the ending anyhow, but you're here. So, but tell me a little bit about these two and about the men that were in your organization or your platoon or in your knife troop and how you all related to each other. So I found that to be interesting.
Well, the thing of it was is that the third platoon was just, I mean, pretty much they were labeled as rebels. You know, from the time that we got passed off from, we were originally in Bravo Troop over in Sweetwater, and it was almost as if this group was just hand selected by the commander of B Troop that if I have to go, this list of men is going to go with someone else. We're known for maybe not being the most user-friendly. As a recruiter, of course, I understood immediately that I would be marked as, oh, that's one of those admin guys, and he's a recruiter, and I don't want to take him with me. He doesn't have any combat experience. And then the other guys that we had there, you know, were pretty much either that. Either they didn't really stand out, or maybe in Vic's case, maybe they clowned a little bit too much, whatever the case may be. But it kind of cemented us together that this was a little family that, you know, we took comfort in one another. We kind of figured that we were going to get, you know, as you know, they say stuff rolls downhill in the military, and here we were at the very bottom of the hill. You know, we get a K troop, we're going to be attached to them, then K troop's going to be cut out, and they're going to be attached to Wisconsin. So as you were looking at who was on the top, sending the stuff down the hill, you were sitting here in third platoon, knowing what's coming at you while you're at the bottom. But it cements us together to where that no matter what came, you know, and when Beth was talking, for me, Joey, you know, as a squad leader, Joey always was kind of that thing that whenever I felt, because you get frustrated as a leader and you really can't convey to everyone below you how you feel, that you're starting to get frustrated. And for me, I was really cold down in Camp Shelby. It was raining, and we're running some sort of training exercise. And I'll never forget that day. Was one of those days I was like, you know what? I don't even know what I'm doing. Why am I here? My wife's at home. I had twin daughters that were on their way, and what am I doing here? And I look over, and I see Joey sitting outside, and just rain pouring on top of him. He's got a little poncho kind of wrapped around him. But he had this look on his face, this little, we always called it this little sheepish grin that he had, that like Beth said, it looked like he had this secret. And I kept thinking, okay, no matter how bad I feel today, if he can sit here, soaked to the bone, freezing to death, and he's got this little secret going on, okay, I'm gonna keep doing what I gotta do. And Vic, with his practical jokes, well, you always kind of hang around with him just to see what's going to happen next, because it was always something that was going to be absolutely funny. More than likely going to be something inappropriate, which is going to make it even more funnier.
Well, I have to stop the whole thing. This time has gone so fast, folks. We're out of time. I just need to thank you both very much for being on Veterans Radio, and I encourage our audience to go out and buy this book. It's by Beth Underwood. It's called Gravity. You've got to read this story. These men are amazing, and this is an amazing story. So thank you both very much. I hope to get you back on the program to finish talking about this. Thank you for being on Veterans Radio.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
It is my pleasure. Trust me, both of you. All right, folks, that's another story that you've heard about here on Veterans Radio, and we will be back next week. So make sure you tune in. You can go to veteransradio.net, and you can listen to our archives, and you can listen to our programs. And look for an email this week. We're looking for a little support. You might be hearing from us. So until next week, you are dismissed.